Of course, summertime is a great time of year. Lots of fun activities going on. Of course, summer road trips. But it's always important to remember that proper measures be taken before embarking on that summer road trip. On the phone with me today, I have Chris Cochran from the California Office of Traffic Safety. He'll be giving us some tips on how to stay safe on the roadways during your summer vacation. Thanks very much for joining me here today, Chris. Appreciate it.
Certainly. Always good to be here.
Now, we know that summer road trips are inevitable, but they require a lot of planning and preparation. What tips can you offer drivers to make sure that they're well prepared before taking that summer road trip?
Well, it's kind of both for road trips and just for summer driving. It's hot out there, and the first thing we need to do in either case is to make sure that our cars are in good shape. Check your tires, including the spare. Make sure that they've got good tread and that they're properly inflated. A couple of years ago, I had a blowout, pulled out my spare, and it was flat also. So don't do what I did, and make sure you check everything. Then also go around, check the engine. Check the hoses and belts, and make sure that they're not falling apart or brittle or anything like that. The battery, the fluids. You know, if you're not up on engines, spend a little bit of cash, not too much, maybe a half an hour at the local mechanic to have them do it for you. But check all the lights. Make sure they all work, the blinkers, the wipers. Clean the windows inside and out. We always forget to clean the insides, and they get all fogged up. Be ready for your trip, whether it is across town on the commute during a hot day or across the state or across the country. Be ready for it. Have an emergency kit also. That's a good thing to have along with you in case you do get stuck out there.
And there's nothing worse than having to spend a half a day with a mechanic after you've been on that road trip for only about a half an hour.
I've done that too many times to count.
Okay. Now, because of the hot weather during the day, more and more people are getting out and doing their walking and running at nighttime to avoid the heat. Now, I can imagine that can pose a problem for pedestrians. What can motorists do to be more aware of pedestrians at night?
Both pedestrians and drivers need to be aware of each other and just kind of what's going on around them. No matter what happens and who's at fault in a motor vehicle against pedestrian crash, the pedestrian is always going to lose and probably lose big time. So everybody ought to be ready for it. Pedestrians, make sure that you're wearing light clothing, maybe even have on a reflective vest or something with a reflective stripe on it. Stick to not in the middle of the street, but the sidewalks or at least the bike lane, that you cross the street at crosswalks or at intersections or at the very least where there's a light so that you can be seen. You may be able to see that car that's a block away going 50 miles an hour, but they can't see you until they're right on top of you. So even if you're in the right, give them the right of way because you're going to lose if anything else happens. Then the drivers, be extra cautious at night. Be on the lookout for the bicyclists and the pedestrians. And if you see anybody at a corner, whether there's a crosswalk there or not, keep an eye on them. Make sure if they look like they're going to be crossing the street, slow down and stop and let them do that. They've got the right of way. But just be on the lookout for groups of people, single people, anybody walking along the sidewalk, and expect them to do the unexpected. So if everybody, bicyclists, pedestrians, drivers, are aware and awake and alert and watching out for the other person and making themselves well known, then we might be able to get through the summer without any bad crashes.
Now, of course, summertime means people are out on vacation having a good time. What about driving impaired? Can we expect an increase in DUI-related incidents during this year's summer festivities?
Yeah, it seems as though the summertime is, you know, if you just kind of count June, July, August, especially July and especially August, then that's the time when, as a month, DUI crashes go up. So everybody ought to be, again, on the lookout for the guy who's weaving or, you know, doing anything else dangerous or suspicious. And for those of us who do want to celebrate, plan ahead. Know how you're going to get from one place to the other, especially coming home, if you're planning on having alcohol or anything else that's impairing. And, you know how you're going to be doing that safely, whether it's a designated sober driver with the group or you're going to be calling Uber or Lyft or a taxi or a family member or a friend, or whether you're going to be staying overnight where you're planning on being, or staying long enough to make sure that you're sober, that you've switched from alcohol to non-alcohol drinks. Just make sure, plan ahead so that you can get home safely no matter what the condition is that you're in during the time that you're out there. And that not only means alcohol. We're seeing fewer and fewer alcohol crashes these days, although it still is the most. But more and more drug-related crashes and more alcohol plus drug-related crashes. More people are using marijuana, opioids, things to help them sleep, painkillers, all kinds of things that can impair, are beginning to have more of an effect on how we drive. And people are just not aware of the dangers. So again, the best thing is look on the side of that prescription bottle, and if it says something about driving, take it to heart and don't do it.
Yes, so people don't often relate that. They think drunk driving is just alcohol, but it can just means impaired driving, actually.
Yeah, we checked out the instances of where a driver is the one at fault. You know, they didn't get hit by somebody else, but they're the ones who caused the crashes, in fatal crashes. And we looked at the toxicology reports, and what we found is that of those DUI-related crashes, or those impaired driving-related crashes, that currently about 60-65% are alcohol, just alcohol. About 30% are just drugs, and about 10-15% are a combination of alcohol and drugs, and that drugs and the alcohol and drug portions are going up every year. So yeah, it's a big deal. If drugs weren't involved at all in the equation, then we could say that our DUI rate was cut by almost 50%. But marijuana impairs, opioids impair, all kinds of medications, prescription medications that we're taking legitimately, do impair, and people need to be aware of it.
And that makes it illegal.
Yes, if you are found to be, you know, if you're weaving down the road and an officer pulls you over and gives you a breathalyzer test and you show zero, you're going to be given a field sobriety test, that old point the finger to the nose, walk the straight line thing. And if you fail that, very often they're going to call in another officer that's called a drug recognition expert or drug recognition evaluator. They've been specially trained to see if you're under the influence of a drug and what drug that probably is. They're going to be able to evaluate you, and they've got like a 95% correct rate of knowing exactly what and how much drug you've got in your system. And even if you have no alcohol at all, if you fail that field sobriety test and you don't pass the DRE's exam, you're going to be arrested and taken down and given a blood test, and they're going to see what's in the blood. And if it shows that there is some other drug that's in your system, then you're going to get a DUI just like any other alcohol DUI. The penalties are the same. And you're going to be out a lot of money and a lot of embarrassment.
Now, speaking of consequences, what are the consequences? I'm sure a lot of people pretty much know what they are, but go over what are the consequences of driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Oh, I think that people underestimate it, really. You know, there's going to be fines. There's, you know, you're going to have $2,000 to $3,000 in fines and court fees and things like that. But you're going to have to go to mandatory classes, and they're $500, $600, $700 to go to those. If it's alcohol, you may have an ignition interlock placed on your car that you have to blow into in order to drive. That's going to have a rental rate on that. If you have a lawyer, that's going to be thousands of dollars. But the big thing is, money-wise, is your increase in insurance. Your insurance rates are going to double or triple and stay that way for years and years and years. So we estimate, depending upon the individual case, that just what we call a simple DUI, there's no crash, no harm, no foul, but you have been caught under the influence of something and convicted of a DUI, that you're going to be out over the course of years anywhere between $8,000 and $11,000. We just say $10,000 to round it off, which is a pretty good chunk of change when you consider that Uber ride may have been $25 that you should have taken. And on top of that, you have all of the troubles. Your boss is going to know. If you have certain types of professional license, you may lose that. Your family's certainly going to know. It's not going to be a pretty sight with all of the people around you, not to mention the dollars.
Now, do they take away your driver's license on your first DUI?
Yes, if you are actually arrested for DUI, if you're taken, you know, if you're pulled away from the car and the car is towed and you're taken downtown to have the blood test, they're also going to take your driver's license right then and there. It doesn't happen later on. That day or that night, that arresting officer is going to take away your license, and you're not going to get it back for months and months, average 4 to 6 months. Maybe you can show a hardship and get a one-way drive to work accessibility, maybe not. But yes, your license is going to be suspended right away. And unfortunately, too many people then turn right around and start driving again on that suspended license. And if you get caught that way, even without a DUI, then your car is going to be impounded. You're going to have thousands of dollars in order to get it out of the impound lot and 30 days. And you're going to have a whole brand new set of thousands of dollars in fines, maybe jail time, things like that. So it's any way you look at it, it's not a pretty sight.
Now, you touched on this a little bit earlier. It is summertime. People are out having parties, enjoying friends out at the lake. These events usually and typically involve alcohol. Tell us what people can do if they plan on drinking. What can they do to avoid drinking and driving?
Well, there's two parts to that equation. There's the host and there's the guest. So as a host, you should be ready for your guests. You're responsible for them. They're your friends. You want them to stick around. So make sure that you have non-alcoholic drinks available, interesting ones, not just, you know, water or something like that. And that when people are drinking, encourage them to trade off one alcoholic for one non-alcoholic. Have plenty of food around, because that slows down the absorption of alcohol. Tell people ahead of time that if they appear to be under the influence and they're getting ready to leave, that you're not going to let them leave in that condition, that they've either got to call a taxi or an Uber or a Lyft or a friend or a family member, or they've got to stay there until they're sobered up, and you've got to be ready to let them stay there until they're sobered up. And as the party goer yourself, you have to plan ahead of what I was speaking about before. Know how you're going to get home. Have a plan in place so that if you do have too many and your host tells you you've had too many or you feel you've had too many, then you put that plan into effect, and whatever it was, you know how you're going to be getting home safely.
It's always good to have a designated driver.
Absolutely. Whether it is somebody with you, you know, the person who is, and by that it's the sober person, not the one who's had the least to drink, but okay, the one who hasn't had anything at all, no matter whether that's a friend, a family member, or a taxi driver, or the bus driver, or somebody else, whoever it is, you know, you need to be ready for, and you need to make sure they're going to be the sober ones.
Now, speaking of designated drivers, I know that OTS released an app aimed specifically at rewarding these individuals. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the app itself, it's a mobile app, and it's free, and it's available for iPhone and Android. You can get it in any of the stores that carry them. It's called DDVIP, those five letters, DDVIP. The DD is for the designated driver. The VIP is because we think that that designated driver is the most important person of the night or the event, because they're making sure their friends and family members get home safely. And to reward them for doing that, when you download this app and register, you're going to first off see that it's got a map function that shows you all of the participating bars and restaurants anywhere in California. First, of course, right where you are, because it knows where you are. But you can check out any place in California. and you'll be able to see where those bars and restaurants are, what their name is, what kind of a place it is. You know, is it a cowboy bar or a rock bar or just a quiet restaurant or whatever it is? And you're going to be able to see what they're going to give you for free by being the designated driver. You walk in, you show the bartender your DDVIP, and they're going to start giving you free stuff, at least free non-alcoholic drinks. And on top of that, a lot of them who are enthusiastic about it are going to throw in free appetizers, free cover charge. Everyone's a little bit different and has a different thing, but all of them are at least going to give free non-alcoholic drinks, especially some that are more interesting. It's not just going to be, oh, here's a Coke. It's going to be some things that look and taste just like the real thing but are non-alcoholic. And even it's got things be up above and beyond that because we want it to be an engaging time. It's got a lot of connections to social media, so you can take photos, which is built right into it, of all of your drunk friends doing stupid things and immediately post them onto social media with all the filters and frames that you've come to know and expect that are built in there. You can review the bar that you're in, and it even has a function where if you find yourself out and you have had one too many, you're not the designated driver, you're by yourself and you've had one too many, one tab, one push button instantly calls Uber, Lyft, or Curb, because we want to have your back no matter what kind of a night out you're having.
Wow, that sounds like a really great idea. Now, where can they download this app again?
The iTunes store for iPhones and whatever your favorite Android app store is, they all have it. Just check under DDVIP. It's the only one of its kind. There are other designated driver apps out there, but they don't have the type of functionality that this does. Most of those just tells you how many drinks they think that you can have before you're too drunk to drive. Actually, those aren't very accurate. We don't include anything like that ourselves. This is the only one that has this mapping function and the free stuff and all of the social media, social engagement and everything else. So just DDVIP, and if it got a blue bottle cap on it and says designated driver, you're in the right place.
Okay, I know that most all the kids are out of school for the summertime, but this is something that's always been a pet peeve of mine. What is the law in regards to school buses with flashing lights? I see this being violated all the time.
Basically, if a school bus stops and all the lights are flashing, not just a turn signal, but they have, you know, those usually at four corners in the back and a couple of corners up in the front where they're flashing, and most all of them now also have that stop sign that swings out by the driver's window, then that means that there's students getting on or off the bus, and everybody, whether you're coming toward them from the front or from the rear, everybody has to stop and wait until all those lights are off, all those stop signs are pulled back in, because that means that there's children who are out there and vulnerable. The only exception is if it's a divided roadway, you know, it has an island down the middle, then the people on the other side of the road don't have to stop. But if it's just a regular city street with no divider in it, then the cars from both directions have to stop until that bus has turned off all of its flashing lights and signs.
Okay, now let's talk about kids and hot cars during the summertime. What are some of the tips that you can give parents and caregivers to help them avoid preventable tragedies of children being left in hot cars?
There's two circumstances that kids get into problems in hot cars. One can be easily prevented, and that is about a third of the time kids are playing in the car, hide and seek, something like that. You know, the trunk is open and they crawl in and pull it shut, or they crawl inside the back seat and it automatically locks on them. And so if you suddenly become missing a child at home or any place else, really, if there's a swimming pool nearby, check that first and then start checking cars, because too many kids get stuck in the hot cars because they're playing in the cars. Tell them ahead of time, you know, teach them that that's not a play thing. Make sure that your cars are locked at all time when you have small kids anywhere around. But the other is, two-thirds or more, is that when a parent or guardian or someone, usually because of a change in routine, forgets that the child is in the back seat. They've fallen asleep. Usually you go by way of Elm Street straight to drop them off at daycare, and this time you needed to go get the dry cleaning, so you went by way of First Avenue, and then you just turned and went to work. And, you know, it's usually a break in routine, something like that. I talked to one family that it happened to where they got back from Sunday church and going to the store, and they had five kids, and four of them were screaming and running around and jumping out, and so the parents were trying to herd them. They had a trunk full of groceries, so they grabbed the groceries and took them inside. Mom thought that Dad got the baby, and Dad thought Mom got the baby. Unfortunately, it wasn't the case. So a child, when left in a hot car, and by hot, that's really anything that's in the sun over 80 degrees outside, and that 80 degrees can be 110 degrees in 20 minutes. If it's one of those 100-degree days, it can be 150 degrees inside of 40 minutes inside the car. And children just can't handle that. Their systems are much less efficient in handling heat than adults are, so they're going to get into trouble and into hyperthermia very quickly. And you really need to do everything that you can to remember they're there. What we suggest is that take something of yours you're going to need when you get to where you're going and put it in the back seat with Junior. So that when you get there, you think, oh, you know, the good thing would be your cell phone. We don't want you using your cell phone anyway, so throw that in the back seat. When you get to where you're going, you're going to need that cell phone. You get out and you go, oh, yeah, it's in the back with Junior, and I've got Junior here, and everything's good. Or take something of theirs, like a teddy bear, and put it in the front seat next to you so that you see it when you're getting out, and that reminds you. It's just a reminder type of thing so that everybody can, again, get home safely and that children are safe in and outside the cars. Those are the times when it's a mistake. It's a change in routine. There are some times when people are just not good parents and they're in the bar, or they think, oh, I'm just going to be in the store for 2 minutes when it's actually going to be 20 minutes. And if you're in a parking lot and you see a child alone in a car, especially if they look in stress, they're screaming, or they're passed out, then it is perfectly legal, and we invite you to do whatever you can to get in there and get inside and get that child out. Breaking a window or whatever is what you should be doing, and then immediately calling 911.
Now, you brought up cell phones. What is the law regarding cell phones?
The law just recently changed. It had a revision, the first revision, really, since the laws came into being back in 2008. Those 2008 laws were meant for the old, you know, flip phone that we all used to have back then. I shouldn't say old. I mean, that was 10 years ago, when people were just calling mainly on their cell phones, and some were texting, but not very easily. But that same year those laws came into effect, the iPhone hit the world, and the world has changed since then. Now 80% of us have a smartphone, and the number keeps going up several percentages every year. And those smartphones have become an extension of us. You know, we talk on them, we text on them, we use them for everything. We're addicted to them. We do our business on them. We check our stocks and play Candy Crush and everything else on them. We can't seem to put them down. Unfortunately, the old laws didn't take into account smartphones and the distractions that can come from it. So this new law does take that into account, partially, and says that from that point forward, you can no longer hold a phone in your hand to do anything. You can't talk, you can't text, you can't Candy Crush, you can't check stocks, you can't set your GPS, you can't do anything when you're driving with the cell phone in your hand. The most you can do when you're driving is have that cell phone mounted in a mount on the dashboard or someplace else and use one finger to swipe or to punch one time to get an app going, and that's it. Everything else, if you're going to be using it, has to be done by voice command or Bluetooth or something like that. You can't hold it in your hand. And that's all well and good. That has helped a lot in letting people know that it's illegal. People are still doing it, obviously, just like people still speed, but now they have absolutely no excuse. You see anybody with a phone in their hand, everyone knows that it's an illegal thing to be doing. Really, though, if you're Bluetoothing, if you've got on headsets, if you're talking to your dashboard, if you're doing text-to-talk, talk-to-text, anything like that, it's still just as dangerous, if not more so, than using your fingers. About the only thing that you've done is put your eyes on the road, but your brain is still very disengaged. So it's better just not to use that technology at all while we're driving. Driving is dangerous enough as it is. I call it a dance of near crashes. And you need to be totally involved with that. So legally, you can't hold the phone. For safety reasons, don't use it at all.
Okay, now you mentioned GPS. Everybody uses GPS in their car. They use Waze. What about using GPS?
If you're parked, if you're in a safe, legal parking space, you can do all you want all day long. When you're driving, if your phone is mounted and you want to start Waze and it's up there, you can push the prompt to start it, and that's it. You cannot program it. You cannot change it, your destination or anything like that when you're driving. So
it's pretty much
ahead of time.
It's pretty much, yeah, set it ahead of time, and then you can mount it on your dash, and you can follow the directions that way.
Absolutely. You can have it talk to you. You can glance over at it, but you cannot actually manipulate it, set it, poke it, anything like that past that one time. Just do it ahead of time.
Now, I've also heard people complain about getting tickets on the side of the road when they're holding their phone, but they're not driving. They're stationary on the side of the road. What is the law regarding that?
It's basically not a law as far as using their cell phones. It's for parking in the wrong place. You don't want to pull over to the shoulder of a freeway and reset your GPS. That's illegal no matter whether you're sitting, you're setting your GPS or sipping a coffee or sleeping or doing anything. You've parked in a no parking, unsafe area. So if you need to use your cell phone, if you're on the freeway, take that next exit and find a legal, safe parking place to do it in. If you're driving down a city street and the street you're on has parking along the side of the road, sure, just pull over and do it. That's perfectly legal. If they're not moving, if they're parked and they're in a legal parking place, they should have no problem.
Okay, now, lack of a better term, you've got some stupid driver stories.
Don't we all?
Yes, every single day in Southern California.
We've been talking about distracted driving and mainly cell phones, but how many of us have seen people doing other things, and how many of us have done some of those things ourselves? I mean, I saw a woman clipping her toenails while driving one day. How many of us have been trying to eat a burrito while we're driving? There are other things that can be done distracted driving-wise, which are pretty dumb, pretty dangerous, and will get us a ticket. And those tickets are actually worse than the cell phone tickets, because if you get a ticket for eating a Big Mac or putting on mascara or turning around and yelling at the kids in the back seat or having a dog in your lap right in front of your windshield, then you're not going to get a cell phone ticket of $160. You're going to either get a reckless driving ticket if you really are all, around the road, or you're going to get a speeding ticket, because the basic speed law says that you must travel at a speed which is safe for conditions. And the only safe speed for eating a Big Mac or putting on mascara is zero. So that's what is going to happen to you if you get popped for one of these other distractions, is you're going to get either a speeding ticket or a reckless driving ticket. But, oh my goodness, there are so many stories out there of, you pick a thing that people do. And there was somebody ran a red light one time, clipped a couple of cars, came to rest, and got out and was yelling at the other people for not getting out of his way. Things like that, the excuses that people do give. I had to speed because it doesn't really matter. I'm from out of town. They're nonsensical type of things, or very often they are arrogant things. There was a survey done, it's been a while now, it's been over 10 years, I think it was back in the 90s, of asking people how good of a driver they were and how good of a driver everybody else was. And what they found was that 80% of us think that we are better drivers than 80% of everybody else out on the road. Now, that's statistically impossible, but it shows how we think we can handle pretty much anything when we can't, obviously. And there are some people out there who actually, you know, really believe that they are, that they should be allowed to use their cell phones and their iPads and their computers while they're driving. They should be able to drive faster than everybody else because they're such a good driver and you're not. Those are the ones that, you know, really give me some of the biggest headaches.
Right. Now, where can drivers find more information regarding the OTS campaigns and efforts that you have underway?
Well, if you'd like to get, you know, basic facts and figures and helpful hints and lists of things like your car emergency kit or more of those summertime driving tips, and when it gets to be winter, there's winter driving tips, you can go to our website, which is OTS for Office of Traffic Safety, OTS.ca.gov. But if you just want to hang around and you know, get good information and have an engaging, interesting time, then I'd encourage people to go to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram sites. And all you need to do once you get to one of those is search on California Office of Traffic Safety, and you'll find us easy.
Okay, great. Some great information there, Chris. Really appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, anytime.